Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light. This public service program comes to you each week under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, written by Morton Wishengrad, is entitled The Talmud and features Alexander Scorby as the narrator. Only one man was created by God as the common ancestor of all for the sake of the peace of the human race, that one may not say to another, my ancestor was better than thine.
The Wisdom of the Talmud. The Wisdom of the Talmud on Bringing Up Children.
Do not threaten a child, either punish or forgive.
On An Evil Tongue.
The tongue of slander kills three: him who slanders, him who is slandered, and him who listens.
On Silence.
If silence be good for the wise, how much better for fools?
On True Wisdom.
Who is wise? He who can learn from every man. Who is strong? He who can control his passions. Who is rich? He who can feel satisfied with his lot. Who is honored? He who honors mankind.
There is a vast literature filling many volumes bearing the impress of holy men and sweet minds, which has stood like a rampart for nearly 2,000 years. The Hebrew verb was lamed, to teach, and the noun was talmud, teaching. The Talmud may be divided into two parts: halacha, law; agada, legend. The poet Bialik says, agada is the air we breathe, halacha is the ground we stand on. The face of halacha is stern, the face of agada is gay. Now, from the storehouse of agada, a parable. On his wanderings to the east, it chanced that Alexander the Great came to the very gates of paradise. He knocked on the sacred portal, and an angel answered.
Who is there?
Alexander.
Alexander? Who is Alexander?
Alexander. You know, the Alexander. Alexander the Great, conqueror of the world.
We know him not. This is the Lord's gate. Only the righteous enter here.
Then I'm not admitted?
No.
Please.
Only the righteous enter here.
Well, then give me a sign that I have been to the gates of heaven. Anything at all. I just want it for proof to my wise men.
Very well. Here.
This?
It will do.
What is it?
A fragment of human bone. A fragment from the skull bone that surrounds the human eye. Take it to your wise men, Alexander. Tell them to weigh it.
Place the bone in one scale, Alexander.
Very good, Your Majesty.
Well, you're the wise man. What next?
We shall weigh the bone. Place some gold coins in the other scale.
Why, this is ridiculous. Any schoolboy knows gold weighs more than bone.
Do as we say.
Very well. I don't understand. The bone weighs more than the gold.
Add more gold. Still more. And still more.
Alexander, add silver. Now, Alexander, add your scepter and your crown jewels.
There's some trick here. I see it with my own eyes, but I don't believe it.
Alexander, this insignificant fragment of human bone weighs more than your entire treasury.
Is that the meaning?
Not yet, Alexander. The gold and the silver in your crown jewels, where are they? Nearly touching the ceiling, outweighed by a splinter of bone. Now, Alexander, reach to the ground and take some dust in your hand. Do as I say, Your Majesty. A little will suffice.
Well?
Sprinkle the dust on the bone.
Just sprinkle it?
Yes.
As you say. I saw it happen. I must believe it, but I don't believe it. A few grains of dust upset the scale.
Alexander, listen to me. What was the bone? That part of the skull which surrounds the human eye. Nothing will ever satisfy the human eye. Nothing except the dust of earth, which is the grave.
Wise man, is that the whole meaning?
Something more, Alexander. When a child is born, the little hand is clenched, as if the child is saying, see, the whole world is within my grasp. But when a man dies, the hand is open, and he says, everything I have taken from life, I now return. I go empty to the grave, with no earthly possession, save only my good works. Alexander, this is the whole meaning.
The Wisdom of the Talmud. On charity.
Better give no charity than to give in such a way as to put a poor man to shame.
On poverty.
When food is lacking in the larder, quarrel knocks on the door.
On adjusting a quarrel.
A reconciliation without an admission of error on both sides is not a true reconciliation.
On evil disposition.
Bad neighbors count a man's income, not his expenses.
What is legend? A great Talmudist declared,
legend is only irresponsible history and therefore not necessarily untrue.
Thus, from the wisdom of the Talmud, the legend of Rabbi Samuel. It is written that Rabbi Samuel came to the city of Rome, and there he chanced to find a bracelet which had been lost by the queen. And the queen sent a crier throughout the city.
Whoever returns the Queen's bracelet within 30 days shall be rewarded with many bags of gold. But if the bracelet is not returned within 30 days, let him who has found it beware. His head will be cut off.
Come with me, Rabbi Samuel. I will show you the way to the palace.
Thank you, my son.
But whoever returns
the bracelet, I'm not going to the palace.
But Rabbi Samuel, the reward you will be rich.
I am not going to the palace.
Rabbi Samuel, do you hear? Please come with me and be rich.
My son, I am going home. I shall not go to the palace.
Rabbi Samuel, for the last time you will lose the reward.
I am not going to the palace.
Only 10 days are left. Why endanger your life?
I am not going to the palace.
It is the 30th day, Rabbi Samuel.
Please lose no time.
I am not going to the palace.
First day, Rabbi, be quick. A ship is ready to take you to safety.
No, my son. Today, I go to the palace.
Unbind his arms and let him stand free. You may approach, Rabbi. Why didn't you return this bracelet?
I have returned it, Your Majesty.
Why didn't you bring it yesterday or the day before and claim the reward? Why did you endanger your life?
Your Majesty, to fear a human being is akin to idolatry. For in the act of fearing, man begins to worship what he fears. And I may worship only God.
Very nice. But why didn't you return my bracelet sooner?
In order, Your Highness, that you should not say I feared you or hoped for reward. For I fear only the Lord, and he is my reward.
Go in peace, Rabbi Samuel. You are blessed in your God, and he is blessed in you.
Above all things, study. So taught the rabbis. Whether for the sake of learning or for material reasons, study. For whatever the motives that impel you at first, you will very soon love study for its own sake. A scholar's hymn. Of the Talmud on sinfulness.
Commit a sin twice and you will think it is perfectly allowable.
On honest dealing.
Be rather a tail to lions than a head to foxes.
On gluttony.
More people die from overeating than from undernourishment.
On propaganda analysis.
That which a child speaks, he has heard from his father or mother.
a parable of righteousness. It happened, they say, that a warrior king came into a peaceful city, and there he found a judge. And before this judge were brought two men who were engaged in dispute. And the warrior king, it is written, sat beside the judge and listened to the testimony.
Daya, are you comfortable?
Yes, Judge. Proceed with your case.
Let the two men who are in dispute come before us.
We are here.
State the nature of this dispute.
I bought a house from this man.
That he did.
After I bought the house, it was necessary for me to make a few repairs.
That he did.
And while I was repairing a wall, I found a great quantity of emerald and jasper and precious sapphire.
That he did.
Then I offered it back to him.
That he did.
And he wouldn't take it.
Is that the dispute?
It is.
Why didn't you keep what you found?
Well, I bought only the house. Therefore, how can the treasure be mine?
I sold you the house. The treasure belongs to you.
It doesn't.
May you never suffer epilepsy.
It does. May the 10 plagues never be visited on your family, but it belongs to you.
No.
I say yes.
I say no.
Shh, be still, both of you. Hear me. You. Do you have a son?
I do.
And you. Do you have a daughter?
I do.
Then hear my decision. You marry your daughter to his son. Let the treasure be a dowry for them. We are happy to have a visitor to this court. Sire, we should be pleased if you would render an opinion on our judgment. Why do you smile, sire? Are such matters settled differently in your country?
Very differently, my dear judge.
We should be pleased to learn.
Very simple. If this dispute should be brought before me, why, I would imprison this man, imprison that fine fellow, and keep the jewels myself.
I see that I have misjudged you and your country. Tell me, sire, does the sun shine in your land?
Naturally.
And does the rain cause the fruits and the grain to ripen?
Yes, of course.
Tell me also, sire, are there sheep and cows in your land?
Yes.
Oh, I understand now. Surely the sun and the rain come to your land for the sake of the innocent beasts, not for the sake of unjust men.
The Talmud is more than an encyclopedia of law and legend. It is also literature. And literature is written life. And so the sayings and the homilies penetrated the daily life of the Jew until they were as familiar as the accent of speech and as beloved as familiar melody. The Jewish mother in the ghetto cities of Poland did not sing of warriors or feats of strength. The cradle lullaby was, "My child, I will give you raisins and almonds and a small white goat to play with. And when you grow up, study and be good, and perhaps you may even become a rabbi." Final Talmudic legend. A blind man and a man without legs were brought before the court of rabbis. Strange to say, these two men had been apprehended in theft, and the man without legs denied his guilt.
You can't punish me. I didn't do the stealing. I can't walk.
Yet you were apprehended in the theft.
But look at me. I can't walk.
Blind man, did you steal the goods in question?
Rabbi, I cannot see.
Bailiff, you will hold these men in another room until we have discussed this case. Take them, bailiff.
This is a difficult case.
It is, Rabbi.
Speaking candidly, how could a blind man steal what he can't see?
Also, how can a man without legs take what he cannot reach?
It's quite clear from the evidence. The man without legs saw the object of the felony. He climbed on the back of the blind man, and together they stole it.
Even worse. Who was the thief?
I think I know. Ask the bailiff to return with the prisoner.
The prisoners are ready, Rabbi.
Thank you, bailiff. One theft was committed. You committed the theft, blind man.
But I cannot see to commit a theft.
And you, man without legs, you also committed the theft.
But you said it was a single theft.
Then how can both of us be guilty?
Bailiff, raise the man without legs. Good. Now, bailiff, place him on the blind man's back. Good. Hear me. For the purposes of crime, you were one, even as body and soul is one. Therefore, for the purposes of punishment, let you also be one. I may only punish the body. For your souls you will answer in heaven. But hear me further. The Lord has already punished your bodies with blindness and loss of limb. Therefore, it is not fitting that we should add further to your punishment. You may leave this court.
Rabbi.
Yes, blind man?
Because you have been merciful to me, who is seeing but cannot see, may he who sees but is not seen be merciful to you.
Heaven and earth I call to be witnesses. Be it pagan or believer, man or woman, man-servant or woman-servant, according to the actions of every human being, does the Holy Spirit rest upon him. The Wisdom of the Talmud. We have taken only a leaf from the Talmud and have read it as if by the thin candle taken from a great torch. Out of a collective human experience of 800 years, there was set down in the early centuries of the modern calendar the body of oral tradition which men called the Talmud. Academies were destroyed, teachers were martyred, study was prohibited. Yet, with his last breath, a dying master appointed his disciple, and the lore and the learning flowed on in the face of a thousand deaths. The verb was lamed, to teach, and the noun was Talmud, teaching. And in what emerged, amid the rivers of text and the oceans of commentary, men were able to behold the afterglow of the Bible. Copies of the script you have just heard, as well as the talk which follows, may be obtained without cost by writing to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we present Dr. Joachim Prince, Rabbi of the Temple B'nai Abraham of Newark, New Jersey. Dr. Prince.
You have just listened to a broadcast which aimed to make an ancient book, the Talmud, which in fact is a library, live again. Admittedly, it dealt only with a few of the thousands of different phases of the gigantic work. Listening to this interpretation, we realize again how great the difficulties are to translate the values of ancient times into the language and the terms of the world of today. Yet the Talmud is not a dead book. For 1,500 years, our people, young and old, made this book the source of their strength. In discussing the ancient laws, even those which were no longer applicable to their daily experience, they forgot the degradations and indignities to which they were subjected, and the glory of the past that they lived, because their present life was too humiliating to be accepted. The small towns and villages of Eastern Europe, the teaching and learning of the Talmud, transformed their dingy little places of Jewish studies into halls of wisdom and faith. Alas, of the people who understood the Talmud, only very few survived. Thousands of teachers and pupils have perished in Europe. Yet the passion and the glow which live in the legal and the poetic, the rational and the mystic, the arguments and the dreams of the thousands of pages which are called the Talmud are part not only of the tradition of the Jew, but of the civilization of the world. And the multi-voiced chorus of this civilization, Judaism, is but one. At many times, each of the many voices is called upon to sing the part of a soloist. The Jewish people in the days of the Bible and Talmud have sung their part. To make it heard for generations to come is a great and sacred task. But to make it part of the whole of the human symphony is a task no less important. In the harmony of all the voices, and in the attempt to make each of them sound clearly, so that it may be heard and understood, lies the guarantee for a better world and a greater, more meaningful civilization.
Thank you, Dr. Prince. The Eternal Light is written by Morton Wishengrad. The music was composed and conducted by Morris Momorsky. Cantor Robert H. Siegel was the soloist, and Alexander Scorby the narrator. The entire production was under the direction of Frank Papp. This program has come to you as a public service of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. For a free copy of today's script, write to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.